Want to make sure I have network connectivity. It's an important thing. Okay, this is obviously Dog of War. My name's Blake, and I'm an internet consultant. I'm based out of Silicon Valley and San Francisco. It's doing really bad over there right now. A lot of dot-coms are dying, but I guess you know that. Okay, first thing I want to begin with is a real-life example here of I forgot my pointer. Anyways, this is a real example of what happened to one of my web servers, a real hack. In fact, it probably happened to a lot of people out there here, and it's only going to get worse. So let's take a look at that. Now, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be toggling back and forth. I wasn't quite sure the arrangement of the screens, so I'm using PC Anywhere as well. I'll be PC Anywhere-ing into Cujo and taking a look in the operating systems going on in there. Basically, Cujo has it's an attack box I put together over the years through several different configurations. And it has 10 operating systems. It's running 5 right now, concurrently. And let's see here. You like my first web page there? Hello world. Okay, as you can see, there's nothing in this this script file except these two files, right? And this is the Unicode exploit that was hit on my box in San Francisco. All right. This is the first script that they ran, and it put a root.exe into that onto Cujo. So it's a CGI exploit, I guess, using Unicode. As you can see, this is really the heart of it right here, of being able to put it into the web server on the other end. I was actually running Service Pack 1 on my web server. This is IS5. You can't see it? All right, let me enlarge it. Wait, I'm sorry, what'd you say? Oh yeah, can you turn down the lights, please? Contrast the lights. Stagehand. Hello? Lights? Lights? Okay, 2. All right. Anyways, it's pretty dark. The next one ought to come out pretty good. And this is actually, so what they did was they copied the CMD executable into the scripts directory. And then they ran this extra script here. And obviously you can't see anything, but let's go back to the original website. Well, you know how Explorer is. You got to do a refresh, right? This is what it said. Yeah, I took out a couple letters in it. Basically, what the hell is that? You know what I'm saying? I know what it is. It's a forecast of the future. It's going to get worse and worse. I did some checking around. Some people said it was a worm going around, landing on a Solaris box, scanning around, and it would find Windows operating systems and exercise this exploit. It also works on NT with Service Pack 6. Hot fixes would fix this. I'm not sure about Service Pack 2. I haven't tried it yet. But I traced it back to Atlanta, and it was hiding behind some firewall. Another person in Tampa, Florida, was telling me that they saw this exploit as well, and they said it came from China. So this happened to me. They flooded my log files, my directories here. Let's go back to the PowerPoint presentation. And this is what they did. As I said, they copied the root.exe, root.exe, renamed it in there. They echoed in these three files continuously with the long script of the page, index.htm, default ASP, default HTM, and they put it all in those directories there. Does that look familiar to anybody? A little bit? You know, it really is. I'm getting attacked all over the world. Russia, Japan, Italy, Canada, the U.S., a lot in the U.S. My name's Blake. Okay, now this is what we're going to be talking about. We have to run fast. You'll want to see some more demos, put Cujo in action, launch all the operating systems attacking. You want to see that? Basically, these are the fine 8 points. I put this in the paper. It's in your book. But basically, building an attack box, it'll save you a lot of time if you follow these steps. The OS selection, what type of OSs you want to run on your attack box. The hardware selection, that's important too. You want to make sure you get the right NICs that support the operating systems you have on. The OS layout, there's a big problem here with configurations. I've banged my head on it for years, of what's the right load order, what's the right partitioning sizing. And then once you get all that laid out on that part, you want to move into the baseline software load, is what I say, what some of the necessities you would need, like you need the latest service packs, or definitely WinZip for the Windows machines, maybe Adobe. For some of your operating systems that you have on there, you want to have them as compilers, so you can execute code. You can also have Perl on there. And then also, so once you got your baseline software load on there, then you fine-tune the sizes of the partitions. And rule of thumb, I always go for about 500 megabytes of space at least in each partition size. And after that, then I make partition images of that default load. Okay, and then I may make a master hard drive copy. In the paper, I said use DriveWorks. It doesn't work for 40 gig hard drives. I pumped 720 mega RAM into this attack box, and DriveWorks still croaked on its automated hard drive copy to hard drive. And then you want to go into making your other your other images. Like you may want to make a hardened image of a box, of say a Linux box. You may want to have like a kernel hardened heavy assault DOS cannon type of Linux machine that's just streamlined, only has the device files and everything that you need just to do its one task. And so you save that image, and then when you're ready to do attack or assimilation or test tools or something, you can load that image back in, and then you're ready to go. You don't have to reload software. There's problems in which I've had of, you get a perfect build of an attack box. I've built about, five or six, seven attack boxes for companies, and you get this perfect load. You got Nmap, you got TCP dump, you got Nessus, you got Saint, you got a whole bunch of other goodies out there, and then you load this one process or something that just screws everything up. And so you have to start from scratch. That's why you just get that baseline and then go from there. And then what I'll do is I'll show you the layout of the lab that I recommend is one of the best for testing tools, for attacking, for victims, for IDSs, firewalls, sniffers, yada, yada, yada. Zombies, I'm going to briefly touch on. I would like to talk about those evil web servers. I don't think we talk about them enough. Some of them out there are really scary. And then I want to address, I went to an incident response classes, one in D.C., right when I got hacked by this this Unicode exploit I just showed you. And it's great and dandy how they show you how to do analysis and all that stuff. In fact, reviewing the logs, I was able to reconstruct that attack. But there's something that I've been to a lot of conferences, the RSA, the Black Hat, the DEF CON, a lot of education classes. I think I've taken 6 hacking classes and about 13 classes altogether for security. And they just don't touch on this. They show how to hack, but what do you do if you're being hacked? Okay, I'll go over the standard protocols that we use today as companies, as governments, as personal use, but I really want to bring out what the future will entail, and that I believe will involve rooting the attacker. And then poison. Poison is based off the Cujo model. It's a honeypot, multiple operating systems, and it's designed to be rooted and then drop down into another operating system and root the attacker. And basically, it's a honeypot on multiple operating systems and IDS platforms on multiple operating systems, all watching the attack come in and compiling that, tracing back the attacker, and then launching another hardened OS to root the attacker. And then there's some conceptual means of clustered dogs of wars, attack boxes, and also the Death Star design. So let's move on. From the ground up, Cujo. I want to talk about how I built it. Some of the OSs I've selected, 98NT, Win2K, Linux. I picked Red Hat for this. In myself, I tried to stick with, say, pick some Unixes like Solaris, like Linux, like Windows, and I saw over the years people using BSD, OpenBSD and FreeBSD. I thought, well, maybe I should get into that. And the more I played with BSD, the more I liked it. Going back a little bit, if you look in the notes, for Solaris, I've had a very difficult time getting that to run with other Unix platforms. It likes to put its auto-configure partition between the third and seventh cylinder, so it blows out everything in the first partition. It's just a headache. The write-up's good on that, I think. And to be honest with you, when I was putting this together, I looked for a lot of tools, and I had a whole bunch of tools to begin with and a lot of CDs, and most of the support I felt was in Windows and in Linux. I didn't find a lot in BSD. I tried to compile some for BSD, and it's just not an abundance for Linux. I see a lot of Mandrake, a lot of Red Hat, and what's Slackware used for tools. So Solaris, basically I left it off this build. You can stick in another drive and toggle the power and bring it up that way. But basically what I'm trying to do is single versus multi-boot, a single operating system. You can have one box that's dedicated that would just do Linux, another box that would just do NT, but then you start building it up. I know people have 36 servers. Three dozen servers, 24 servers. Here you can load 10 operating systems on one box, and you can use VMware to boot into other OSs. So I recommend a multi-boot for most cases. Now, Cujo is like a homebrew type of deal here. Actually, I've built it for companies that a lot of people, when they build attack boxes, they may have one or two operating systems, typically like a Windows NT and then a Linux box. I prefer three operating systems as a minimum. I like to have a boot OS, which I select as 98. There's a lot of great tools that run on that as opposed to other operating systems, including Ghost, Partition Magic, DriveWorks, and lots of little tools. For hardware selection, a motherboard, to be honest with you, what I have in here, my motherboard goes up to about 1 gigahertz. Processors-wise, I don't think you can run multiprocessors for a 98 operating system, so you're sort of limited for one on this. What I'm running on here, I recommend Intel. What I'm running on here is an AMD. I wanted to give it a shot. I know that there's something currently going on with overheating for AMD processors, and if the fan goes off, it could cook the processor in 17 seconds. I don't know if that's true, but I think Intel's a good standard. RAM's really cheap nowadays. Put as much in as you can. 256 stick of RAM would run you about $60. It's probably cheaper on eBay. Get a floppy. Get NICs that support all OSs. Get a good CD-ROM. I can't tell you how many times I've run into the install CDs is the biggest problem of setting everything up. I have to play musical chairs with CD-ROMs. And I get all sorts of weird errors, and it's not until I change the CD-ROM with another type or whatever, it runs. So, external modem. I've tried internal modems. I got a whole bunch of them. I could throw them out to you. They don't work good for these multi-boots. External US Robotics, I think it's like $89 nowadays, works for the Unix operating systems and also the Windows platform. Always get a printer, a CD burner as well. Total cost, I wouldn't pay more than, you can buy some at online like auction.com, ebay.com, go to the, with all these dot-coms dying now, go to the leasing agencies, and they have a surplus of Cisco routers and lots of compact and Dell boxes to sell. So you can go with those guys as well. I'd like a Pentium 3. I'm not sure about Pentium 4 right now. I understand that it has, it makes some DOS-based applications run slower. So total cost somewhere between $300 and $900, good estimate. And what I want to do is, when I find the OSs that I want, I pick the hardware what I want. I get clones, exact clones, same hard drives. I pick IDEs as opposed to SCSIs; they're cheaper. So what I normally buy is I would buy four boxes, and they're all clones of each other, and they're all set up the same, so I can pull and remove hard drives that way. Laptops, this laptop here is a compact. It doesn't load NT very well, didn't have the drivers, but Dell, Inspiron, Toshiba, I think most of the recent laptops are good nowadays for all operating systems, but make sure for your Unix flavors. Multi-boot options, the MBR, I'm playing more and more with the MBR for the Poison design. As to which OS to boot to. I always make a backup copy of the Windows Boot INI. The Lilo boot, I don't like to use it as the main selection of an operating system. I want something stronger, something more configurable. Maybe you differ if you're a Linux guru and you like being that much on. I like the simple fact of just loading in software that works and not having to think about it, because I got a lot of other work to do. Same thing with FreeBSD. I compared BootMagic against System Commander. BootMagic doesn't recognize Solaris, it'll croak. System Commander is great, it'll format a lot of different types of Unix partitions. The newest version I haven't tried, but I think that it was a little clunky when I was first using it. I couldn't resize partitions that well with it, and there's some limitations. I think Boot Magic is one of the best, and also VMware. I really recommend, if you're going to use an attack box or make one, you use VMware as well. Load order, which one first? The problems with installation, I'm going to go into that. Partitions, primary, the four primary partitions, the extended. Within those, you can have logical drives. And then for VMware, the it's really great in the fact that you can create these virtual partitions, and you can size them up to 2047, I believe, megabytes. And you can move them off the operating system that's loaded on and save them in a hard drive, another drive, and then bring them back. I just really recommend that you play with that stuff. Layout of the hard drive, sizing, resizing. Okay, let's go in here. The first step one is what I normally install in the first partition is Win95. I, out of countless times of loading it, I recommend 1,700 megabytes of space because you do want to add on some tools later on. And there are some issues with NTFS partitions and the fact that they need to be within 4 gigabytes of the first partition, first primary partition. And so normally what I do is I format that partition with FAT16 because I want all OSs to be able to access that. NTFS won't be able to access FAT32. So that's why I pick FAT16. Then I load NT Workstation on that, and I give that a size of about 1 gig. And then NT Server, I give that a 2 gig. Now, each one of these OSs, they all have the same IP address to them, all on the same NIC cards. And I do that on purpose. And I make the passwords no passwords for the NT Workstation and NT Server and the Professional and the Advanced Server, simply because if I'm going to be going through multiple configurations and trying different loads and all that stuff, I always want a default to go from. You can change the password later. So, all right, step three. Now this is a functionality problem with Partition Magic. I think I'm running 6.0. It's a lot better than 5. 5 won't work on this. Get 6.0, okay? I've been through a lot of frustrations with 5. 6 is great. And this is a little bug in the software, but what you'll need to do is once you load the NT Workstation, NT Server, then you want to shrink the C drive, FAT16 where Win98 is, and open up a little space in there to where you can insert the boot partition for Linux. And I've seen things where you can have 50 megabytes for a boot partition. Doesn't really use that much. I go for 70. Just to be safe, I may want to put something in there. I do want to format the root partition and the swap partition. I make the swap the same space as the RAM, hopefully. Sometimes I go as high as 384. And this would be Red Hat Linux 7.1. And then, again, due to some of the quirkiness of Partition Magic, I have to fill the rest of the drive here with FAT32. And this also has to do with problems with the install of Linux Red Hat 7.1. And you're going to have to go into your boot INI file for step 4 and make some changes to the partition number. Number 5, once you get them all loaded, make sure that they all function. You have network connectivity, you're able to get to the internet, because you spend a lot of time putting all these OSs on there, and you don't want like NT Workstation to be tweaked and not have network connectivity, and you can't do anything about it, and you've wasted a whole bunch of time. Amazingly, Windows 2000 has the ability to go beyond the 1024 cylinders, and so you're able to go beyond and put these partitions in the extended Actually, to say that, go back, all the works, all the NT and the Windows 2000 are in the extended partition. So I make two primaries, one is 98, one is Linux, and the extended I put everything else in. As well, I also create a temp file that's a temp partition that's FAT16, and also a storage partition which I would load tools. I'd also get another hard drive device, one that's 40 gig, and load all my tools on there as well. Baseline software loads, again, Windows, you want to use like WinZip, maybe Office, those type of things. I got that listed in the book, what you need. We got to speed up here a little faster. Again, when it's all said and done, it should look like this, the boot INI file, and the layout of the partitions. Again, we talked about the different loads, different configs, drive imaging, storage. I don't put VMware on the default load with baseline because it's an application and it's kind of quirky sometimes. So you can or cannot, it's up to you. Here is Cujo running five operating systems at once. I got them all pinging here. I'm running Windows 95, NT, Red Hat Linux 6.2. In the paper I said run 6.1. I've had so many problems with the install on that. It freezes right at the end. I just said screw it. I'll go with 6.2. There's also a root exploit, kernel exploit on 6.1, I believe. And so in the virtual partitions, I have like Win95, NT Server, BSD, Red Hat, and you can see the outline of the partitions there and the sizing. Tools. It's not really fair to speak. I'm not giving enough time to tools. In fact, I'd like to give another presentation on tools specifically, because I played with a mess load of tools, and a lot of bad tools and good tools and tools that'll screw up your system. And I almost lost my laptop one time because of a tool that I couldn't do anything with it. But anyways, the selection, commercial grade integration. Some tools, you know, in working with different configurations, some tools conflict with one another. And so you got to find that right load order of what you want. I like to load a lot of different scanners, but I don't like to load so many scanners on an operating system to where it just acts as a CPU hog and drains it down to where I can't do anything. So I do a lot of testing, and we're going to go and show you the lab and how I evaluate them. Some tools, say for example, I get this tool and it has no instructions on how to use it or anything like that. With this configuration, I have multiple operating systems, say for like a Windows, I can try it on Advanced Server, Professional, NT, and Windows 98 and see if it works. Another thing too, again, is parsing the code. I think it's really necessary. Some of y'all don't have time for that. You just want to point and click and go. That's fine, too. I believe in parsing the code. Go through the C code. Take a look at the remote. Take a look at the buffer overflow. See how they're constructed. And then move on with making your own scripts and tools. So, again, I'd really like to cover more than this, but I got to run. Layout of the lab. I got Cashmere as a master file server toolbar. I used to blow up IDS systems in a lab all day long with my Indian buddies for Network Associates a while back, and you know, had some boxes there that were Pakistan and India, and so Kashmir just stuck. The Cujo clones, network connectivity, fractional D, select what type of connection to the internet. I usually like to get two or three connections to the internet. That way I can dial out and then come in through, say, like a DSL or a cable modem and attack in. So you don't have to go out and attack other people's sites. You go out and you attack yourself. Get the router switches, network stuff in here. Here's the layout of the lab. This is typically what I'd like to do. I have an attack victim. Notice attack one and victim one with an external modem. Now this would be a Cujo, which could be BSD or Linux or whatever, dials out to the internet and then comes in through the internet access point of the dedication of fractional T1 DSL, all that stuff, and goes into the network. you could also connect it into the back of the network and try it on attack two. There's a master file server. It has all the tools on it. I do like to get a Sunbox on there as well. I run Solaris on an Intel platform, but I think true Solaris should run on a Spark. Get some sniffers, NDISs. Automated versus hands-on vulnerability scanners. There's a lot of companies out there nowadays coming out with these automated scanners. You can go out there and it'll scan your system periodically. And then versus hands-on of building an attack box and then attacking yourself and having that knowledge. I really think that you should have both. I like hands-on more. If I was to contract it out, I would want both, or more so the hands-on. But, you know, in a couple years, I'm sure it'll change. Zombies, just briefly touch on it. Now, I said that you could go out there and find equipment and stuff like that, buy it. Well, people do it on the internet for free, right? They get their own boxes from zombies. I'm still waiting for zombies evolve to where multiple operating systems it can control, and including routers and firewalls. It'd be interesting to see how that goes. I do recommend playing with all the tools, the rootkits, the Netbus, Back Orifice, Sub7. Boy, there's a whole bunch more, too. There's a German make. Now, the evil web servers, I do want to touch on as well. What are they? Well, I remember a couple years ago when I went out surfing on the web. I took control of my browser. I think I was running like Netscape 4 or something like that. It launched so many instances of my browser, it crashed it. I couldn't relaunch it, so I had to reboot the machine. When I rebooted the machine, the browser set my homepage to that website, and it decreased my security settings all the way down to the minimal amount. And I was like, wow, someone's really good out there. I read this about web spoofing, one of the first books I read. I hadn't seen it until a couple weeks ago in True Life. And where do you find all these evil web servers? I used to think, well, the hacking sites where you download tools, they're watching you, they're, you know, downloading Trojans and all that stuff. What I'd really worry more about is the hardcore sex sites. I consider them one of the most dangerous sites out there. If you don't believe me, go load a 95 or a 98 in a browser and go to those sites and throw your morals away and go out there and see how they play with your system. They'll download stuff in the background, they'll reset your homepage, they'll do all sorts of stuff. They will blow out your browsers. They blew out my Internet Explorer 5.5 Service Pack 1 and also Netscape 6.0. So it's good to, when you go out there, have a sniffer and watch those packets come in and capture the signatures and then play with them. Conventional methods of web attacks. What do we do today? Well, we tweak our firewalls, access lists. We put on more protective padding, more firewalls. We put in some IDS systems. Some of the other methods we can do, email, call them, tell them to stop, call their ISP. Call in law enforcement, prosecute. There's this safe harbor thing, I think, that's going on now between governments. A lot of times, ignore the attack, endure the abuse. When I was a director of information security for a bank, I was so overwhelmed with the stuff that I saw. I wound up mitigating risk more than actually doing hands-on that I like to do. And banks are typically more mortar and brick type of foundations, and they're not used to the internet, and then they put all this stuff banking online, and they're pretty wide open, and it's scary. And I think there were some things in the news about that too, about 300 banks being compromised. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it if somebody installed a little program that decrements a penny from everybody's account and puts in another one. And that's international stuff going on. It's getting worse, as I say. But sometimes the old cliche, the best defense is a good defense, and you can argue with me on this, but let's say what I think will happen in a couple of years is that you do need to fight back. You do need to root the attacker. So it's a sense of a cyber war. One, this is kind of funny, you can put a banner saying, hey, if you don't leave this site at once, you know, you're subject to root compromise, DOS attacks, or file deletion. I mean, that may seem kind of funny now, but it may be in the future. I mean, think of it this way, okay? We start off as humans as starting off with rocks and spears, and then we moved into crossbows and guns and bombs and all that stuff. This is another form of fighting right now. We got hacking groups going on there, and it's sporadic fighting, but eventually we're going to cluster together, and we're going to build perimeters, and we're going to fire back. It's just the natural course of what us humans do. Here's some other options for fighting back. Wishful thinking. I wish the developers out there for some of the most popular scanners today would allow a kill switch, integrate that into their tools to say, hey, I don't want to be scanned. I could send a packet back that would turn that scanner off. Or you can DOS them back by flooding them with packets. You may get a phone call saying, hey, why are you flooding me, you know? It's like, well, why did you scan me with NMAP? You know? And so they may not, it's a wake-up call to them. They may want to take a closer look at their boxes to see what's on there. Bounce their box. Nuke it. Blow it up. And this is like in real government situations where you got to stop them somehow. You can't stop them all. You can't stop some of the spoofers. Now here's a concept. Identify the tools that's running, okay, and pop it. Think of a tool, an application like a web server. It listens too with TCP connects and all that stuff. Why not throw it some funky packets or try to blow up that tool? A lot of those tools may run as root access, so maybe you can do, maybe if we start targeting the tools and finding buffer overflows in them and establishing a root on those boxes. So, or a lot of times, you know, I found out there somebody's running a default load of Linux 6.1, Red Hat 6.1, and running NMAP, and it's just going. It's just default load. They got the Woo FTP daemon on there. They got all the RPC stats and all that stuff. All those vulnerabilities are just wide open. So, let's see. Yeah, once you've rooted the box, one, you can do nothing. You can back out and say, okay, I did it. Okay, I could take control of this box if I really wanted to. Or you could leave a message, calling card. You could turn off the tool. You could remove it. You could turn the tool on them. Okay, you could shut down their box, halt it. You could cripple their network. You could send their OS into a kernel panic, a blue screen death, wipe their hard drives, own their box. Another way is the upstream router. Play with them that way. Okay, poison. We went in and talked a little bit about poison, multi-boot, honeypot, IDS. Once rooted, it engages in an attack box. Death Star design was just basically what the Death Star design is like a huge box that is designed to scan the internet, map out the vulnerabilities of the boxes, have probes upstreams on different routers, different parts of the network, realize where the floods are coming in from, the spoofs. If say like you have a destination, source address of a 10.x and you know it's flooding your network, you may be able to track it upstream and pulse out a denial of service things from there. So let's go into the demo. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cut on Cujo here and launch the attacks. Now right here I'm using an ICMP flood, 30,000 packets. Let's see. Nessus. CyberCop. Oh, where is it? Come on. That's right, I need to scroll up. BSD. And I'm ping flooding. So basically for BSD, it's flooding it with as many packets as possible. Should work. Now, basically, I'm running a 550 megahertz processor on board, and it's sort of taxing the CPU power on here. Let's see if I can get out of this. So I've launched them. All right, I did a... we can already see some attacks start to occur. Let me turn off the firewall here, and we'll go for as long as we can. I am going to try to blow up some of the operating systems here, trying to fight back. One of the things, again, I would try to like for Nessus. I've had some limited success. I need to test it out for more of DOSing it, DOSing the application itself. So, okay, I think that's enough. Let's see what we got, see if anything's cooking here. So as you see, Cujo Win95 is more and more and more attacks are coming as we go on down the road here. Let's fight back. This is an upstream battle. Sometimes I win, sometimes I don't. I lost this morning against Cujo because it just hits me so hard. The reason why I picked these particular tools, BSD has a broadcast address, so it's flooding the network. Everybody's pinging back, so it's creating a storm that creates data collisions. So it's hard to get packets in to the operating system to kill it. CyberCop and Nessus are throwing their packets, and they got denial of service module selected. The IP fragmentation is good as well. Let's start off, since I'm hurting for time here, and I may not be able to get through. But let's see if we can take out NT. First, what we got to do is I'll try a brute force method of getting the password. The IP address of the NT box is 10.0.0.4. So we'll let that kick off. Sorry. Let's go ahead and blow up 95. That's a gimme, right? Everybody knows how to do that one. You have to turn off your little firewall. There is a vulnerability, by the way, with Black Ice I found. It's fixed now, but you have to manually fix it. If you cut on your operating system, if you first boot up and you know you get that log on screen, Black Ice will not cut on until it's first launched. Once you log in, then it cuts on. So that comes with the CD that you buy out of the store. So be aware of that. Go ahead and log in, and then Black Ice will cut on. I actually recommend IDA Pro. No, it's not IDA Pro. I'm sorry. Zone Alarm as a better alternative. They cost the same amount. I've tried using them both together. That works too, but sometimes it gets a little cluttered. So you can run both firewalls at once. Let's get back to our screen here so you can see it blow up. Okay, now, if you look at this top screen right here, this is the Win95. See it right there? .3 is the IP address of the 95 box. Sure, I agree. Something happened over there. Let's nuke it one more time just to be sure. Actually, let me try this. There we go. It's gone. Let's see how our password guesser is coming along. Are we making it? Looks like we're going pretty good here. If I run out of time, for the BSD, what can we do if it's a broadcast address? Can we Telnet into it? Can we FTP into it? We can't. We're screwed. So those spoof addresses... if we can't block them at the firewalls and at the routers, or harden your OS some way to where it denies those type of IPs, the non-routable IPs, then do it. That's about the only way, I think. So I'm going to kill this guy. We can't do anything about BSD, so we'll kill that guy. We'll free up some system processes. There we go. Looks like we got some passwords here going on, and I'll show you a couple different ways we can shut the tool off itself, hopefully. Let's see if we got the name of the password. Here it is, username, administrator's password. So I'm going to go up to programs, administrative tools, computer management. Let me launch another way to do it, too, since we got the shares. Call time if I need to go, so. Okay, under actions, let's go to another computer. Looks like we're running out of time on that. Let's try another attack for Windows. Looks like we are out of time. What I would do for the Linux operating system for Nessus, I would try to do a send flood on the ports that it's listening to. It goes in a sequential order, so you can slow it down that way. Also, I would take a look at the operating system and look for exploits. I do have a buffer overflow for the Woo FTPD 6.0. So you would establish root, do a net stat, then do a kill number 9 on the application that is attacking you. The same sort of thing for like a free BSD attack. So that's it. Any questions? All right, thank you.